one of the players for FAU, her role, I guess, she wasn't starting. Her role, though, every time somebody would make the last out of the inning offensively for FAU, this player was out there. She took every piece of equipment, helmet, gloves, bat, and she brought with her their defensive equipment. That's the kind of teammate you like seeing. That's the kind of player you like seeing. That's the kind of work ethic.
Hey, I'm Ashley Agle. Some of you might know me as Ashley Burkhart, and I'm a former D1 and professional softball player who spent a few years coaching in the college game before deciding to put all of my focus into youth softball players and helping them make their dreams and their goals happen for them. It's our job to help them unleash their potential and become the athletes they've always dreamt of. I come from a small city in the Midwest and didn't let that stop me from making my goal of playing D1 softball a reality. No matter where you live, you have the tools to help you thrive, and I am hoping through this podcast to help you get there. On this podcast, you'll learn from Olympians, Hall of Fame coaches, and elite players what their journeys have been like, and you'll also learn from me and my family a bit of our journey through the game. I'm so excited to have you here, so whip out your notebook and let's learn how we can grow in this game together. Welcome to When the Cleats Come Off. Hey, welcome back to When the Cleats Come Off. I'm stoked. I'm getting another guest who's been on before chatting about postseason softball. We are minutes away from postseason starting, and if you're listening to this when it airs, postseason literally starts next week. Last year, Justin McLeod gave us a breakdown in episode 123 of what we could expect in the 2023 season, and I thought it'd be fun to get him back sharing his thoughts for the 2024 postseason stretch. He's currently the associate editor for D1 Softball, and he's probably my go-to on Twitter to see what's going on in the game. In this conversation, he's going to share his take on why Oklahoma isn't on top right now and why he believes that makes for a more exciting postseason than in years past. We talk about the effect the transfer portal has had on top programs, why he prefers watching the game in person, and what he looks for that someone watching on TV usually can't see. He shares what teams he's noticed have had incredible culture and what that looks like from his point of view, what teams are trending upwards at the right time that we should keep our eyes on, what factors he thinks about when making postseason predictions, because he makes some bold ones, and then we hear what his dark horses are that he sees surprising everyone this postseason. And we end with what he's looking forward to most this postseason, and why he thinks this is the time where we're going to see some breakout players become household names within our sport. I'm so excited for this year. I'm so excited for this conversation, and I think you're gonna love it. All right, let's dive in. Let's roll. Justin, you're back on the show. How's it feel?
I am. I actually feel pretty privileged here. We had fun last time. We always have fun.
We did. Last time you were here, it was just before softball season started last year. And we were at the place where I was like, well, it's Oklahoma. That's who it's going to be. There's no doubt about it. They're going to win it all. And they did.
Yep.
Even though it was a harder year than probably years prior. But just like you predicted, that happened. But now we're in a weird state where Texas is ranked one. Oklahoma's ranked two. Things are changing. How do you feel about it?
I think it's fun, honestly. I think it's fun. Just, you know, parody is the word we always use. I don't love that word in this case. I just like, you know, not going through a season with a foregone conclusion. Like, it's going to come out in the games. So I love that. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. How do we get here? Like, why is Texas on top, you think?
Well, honestly, I love the development of the young players. You know, it's not that Texas doesn't have any kids who came out of the portal. They do. I mean, Jolie Mitchell's been big for them this year. You know, think about Bella Dayton a couple of years ago coming from Arizona. She's still there. But in the age of the portal, if you think about it, so many pieces of Texas's lineup and even their bullpen are homegrown players. They're players that Texas recruited that Mike White and his staff found. You know, if you just go around and you think about the Katie Stewarts of the world and the Reese Atwoods of the world, the Mia Scotts of the world, and even, you know, Sitlali Gutierrez and Tegan Caban, and there's so many of these studs that have helped make Texas so good that started as Longhorns. And I love that because I feel like you're seeing that less and less nowadays. Mm-hmm. But Texas didn't go all in on the portal. They picked up pieces. They picked up, you know, like I mentioned, Mitchell or Dayton or even Mac Morgan or Estelle Check, pieces that would help them, players who would be able to contribute and fill a role for them. But so many of those players, they identified and said, not only can you help us, we're going to put you in position. We're not going to bring somebody in over the portal. We're going to let you, if you suck, we're going to let you work out of it. Mm-hmm. If you're great, you're going to be great. And mm-hmm. think, now look at how many of them are great. I think that's the biggest piece to me is they put faith in them. You know, they weren't number one right away. Reese Atwood was not a superstar right away. Took her a minute to settle in. Look at her now.
Mm-hmm. There is an aspect of nurturing that I think is so important. And I know we went, you know, these past 2 years, I feel like everybody's come from the portal. Yeah. All the stars on every team, they've come from the portal. And like, we still see that. We still have that. Sure. But yeah, maybe we are kind of leaning more into that. Okay, this loyalty, but also like nurturing that you get. You have time to struggle. You have time to be yourself and not have to just like go in and out of the door, you know, and try to find something new. Because I mean, as someone whose two younger sisters have been in the portal, it's hard to start anew. Like my sister Christina, when she came from the portal to go to Michigan, I mean, she had already spent 5 years at Carolina and loved every minute of Carolina. And thankfully, Hutch was this welcoming coach who even was like, I don't normally take kids from the portal.
Yeah.
But Christina like found another home and she enjoyed it and loved it. But like, you don't always see that with kids in the portal. Like yeah. People are in and out like crazy. I mean, we're seeing it with just college basketball, that season being done. So many kids are now in the portal that you would never expect. And they're right. Going to another school. And this is like their third school. It's insane. Yep.
It's a totally different animal even than it was 5 years ago when portal started. It's totally mm-hmm. different animal now. Mm-hmm. And you're right. It doesn't always go the way people envision it going. It doesn't always happen that way.
No, sadly. How many miles have you racked up this year heading to tournaments?
Not even to 10,000 yet. It's kind of sad. No, I think last check I was somewhere around 75. I think I'm at 8,000 miles now. I've flown for a couple of trips this year. So that's big. Yeah. Got on a plane for these couple of weekends. So that's knocked down the mileage count. But I was right around 8,000 after the first few weeks.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. So why? I mean, I'm guessing you'd rather be there watching in person than on a TV screen. Yeah. Why, as a reporter, is that important?
Well, there are certain aspects of the game that I can't pick up from a TV screen. Whether that's, you know, to me, those are the most important things. And doing things the way I do, I'm less concerned with, okay, how is this pitcher pitching? What's her velocity? What pitch is she throwing? I can find that out from a stat sheet for the most part, or a quick look at, you know, some in-depth stats and find out what pitch she's relying on. That's important, don't get me wrong. But for me, the bigger things that come into it is I like watching when she comes off out of the circle, off the field, after a big strikeout or after giving up a two-run shot. What does she look like? How does she interact? You know, I think there's a couple of things this year. I was down at LSU for a couple of games. And every half inning when the LSU pitcher would come off the field after the inning was over, there Beth Chirina, couple of the graduate assistants, couple of the assistant coaches would all gather with the pitcher in the on-deck circle and just, I don't know what they talked about, but, you know, they would clearly run over what had happened in that inning. Mm. It wasn't, we're all going to disappear into the dugout or whatever. We're going to talk about it right now, what worked, what didn't, et cetera. You don't see that on TV. There was another game that I did earlier this year. I'm trying to remember who it was. Oh, it was Florida Atlantic at Central Arkansas. Central Arkansas, like 2.5 hours from my house. I know all the folks over there. Both teams, pretty solid teams last year. I'm like, okay, I'm going to go over. I was going up to Arkansas for a tournament. It's like a Tuesday, Wednesday game. Stop by. I'm sitting there and I'm chatting with a couple of UCA folks. And I just happened to notice one of the players for FAU, her role, I guess, she wasn't starting. Her role, though, every time somebody would make the last out of the inning, offensively for FAU, this player was out there. She took every piece of equipment, helmet, gloves, bat, and she brought with her their defensive equipment. And I'm like, that's the kind of teammate you like seeing. That's the kind of player you like seeing. That's the kind of work ethic. Because that player, she doesn't start a lot, gets some pinch hits, has had some good pinch hit opportunities and has come through, don't get me wrong. But she's not starting every day. But after I noticed that the first time in that game, I started watching her. And every time, every time, she had it all there ready. She was right at the front of the dugout, had a big smile on her face. She had her role. That kind of stuff makes a difference. Seeing that kind of stuff that you can't see on a TV screen makes a difference. And that, to me, is the biggest piece about seeing being at games in person. And don't get me wrong, there's a certain aspect of, yes, I can watch a pitcher's pitches not on a TV screen. Now I can go from whatever angle I need to go from. Yeah, that's all there, don't get me wrong. But seeing those extra pieces that you can't get on TV or that happen during the commercial break, that's the kind of thing that makes a difference. You can pick up a lot from that kind of stuff that tells you a lot. Because I think things like that, you know, can also tell you more about the culture of a team, the culture of a pitching staff, the way a coach coaches and teaches. And that's the kind of stuff that makes a difference that you can't get from sitting at home. Don't get me wrong. I love my desk. It's a great desk. Got a nice chair.
It's comfy. But
that's the kind of stuff you can't get from sitting in that nice chair.
It's so funny you say that because, you know, that's why college coaches actually go out and recruit in person. Like they don't choose a kid until they see him in person because they're looking at the things that you don't always see on the field.
Right.
And another piece is I've interviewed so many coaches on this podcast or even just talked to them. I was a college coach for a minute, and the most successful teams, and you can hear it from anybody, are the ones where almost every single person on that bench owns their role.
Yep.
And on the TV screen, we don't know who's that bench player that's owning their role, right?
Right.
So you probably get super great insight on like what cultures are hot right now. Like what cultures are doing great? Like, do you have a few teams like at the top of your mind where you're like, they've got this element?
Well, yes. And I'll say this, that's one of the things that I have an appreciation the most for about Oklahoma is clearly the culture they have. Every player there has bought into. Now, whether what that culture is, whether it's the religious aspects of things, whether it's playing for your teammates and just giving your all for your teammates, whether it's just knowing how to handle adversity and pick your teammates up who maybe aren't as strong in that area, very clearly, everybody buys into that OU culture in the course of a given year. And that's hard to do nowadays because they do have transfers and freshmen and things like that. But that's one thing about OU is pretty consistently obvious is that the people that wear the OU softball uniform buy into that culture. You know, when I go around, I think about like a Duke, for instance, when I've seen them this year. I actually go back to a series at Florida State. I was down there for the Duke FSU series in Tallahassee. And I look at Duke and, you know, I remember Cassidy Curd was a stellar freshman last year. Jayla Wright wasn't bad, but she wasn't the ace. Curd was the ace of the freshman. You walk into this year and Wright looks like the ace in the circle. Curd's not so taking a step back, but they kind of switched roles a little bit. Lily Walker, though, is the one who impressed me the most. Because I did a midweek game with them last year, and then I watched her pitch against Florida State. I've seen Duke a couple of times this year. Reliever, doesn't get a ton of innings. She comes in, though. She's steady Eddie. She can come in with runners on base. She can come in with the bases empty. And you see the same from her across the board. And so I look at that Duke pitching staff, and I think, you know what? Clearly, they've bought into the culture, they bought into whatever their role needs to be, and you can see them backing each other up. And then that Duke offense, like I watched their three hole lay down a bunt. How many three hole hitters do you see laying down a bunt?
Surprise, surprise.
Right. Yeah. And you know, a lot of times, and it's not necessarily an ego thing necessarily, but a lot of times you don't see three hole hitters wanting to lay down a bunt. And here they go up there, just lay it down real easy.
Yeah.
Because that's what you needed. Tight game, whatever it was. Yeah, big swing. But when one run makes a difference, okay, all on my roll. They were another one that stood out. And, you know, I hate to go back to the same well we were just talking about, but just as I go through my mind, I remember that same FAU-UCA game. And I forget who the player was, but there was a player who just balled out in that game. And I remember that she had not been starting a lot. But if memory serves, and I know my brain is supposed to be some kind of encyclopedic, but don't judge me if I get this wrong. I think she was 3 for 3, and it was a triple short of the cycle, maybe.
Mm.
Like, just balled out. But the one thing I remember is when she hit the home run. So UCA, Central Arkansas's outfield fences are high. And so it's not always the easiest thing to get a home run over them. She hit one over. And the one thing I remember from that game was her teammates, not her. Like, she was rounding the bases, and I feel like she was pretty excited or whatever else. But I remember her teammates. You had players coming out of the dugout, jumping up and down. You'd have thought they hit the home run themselves, screaming. Like, you know, players get excited when their teammates hit home runs. This was a little different. This was different. You could tell. I think that kid had one hit on the year before that. And you could tell how happy her teammates were when that ball went out. And I'm like, that to me is something that's pretty indicative that somebody's doing something right.
Mm-hmm.
And just for some reason, that home run stands out to me. And that's similar to the way the Duke bunt stands out, and just Oklahoma in general and some others. That stands out to me because that to me shows there's something going right from a cultural perspective.
From my perspective, it sounds like it's team before me. We before me. Like, yep. You see it all the time. It's so much easier to say than do.
Right.
But those are actions that you're seeing that, you know, at the end of the day, those are the teams that are going to make it deep. Because it's the teams that, I mean, this is so ridiculous that I'm bringing this up, but my junior year of high school,
okay,
my team won state. And we were losing, I believe it was... Talk about memory serving. This is like over 10 years ago. More than that. We were down by like 7 runs in the 5th inning. And our team committed 9 errors in the game. Like, no shot, right? And all of a sudden, like, we flipped the switch and we started making it about like us, because we were so worried about this Boonville team where they've been to state so many times and they brought their entire city with them, or town, I should say, in the stands. And like, there was no way we were supposed to win that game. But it's like all of the things that you're talking about, it's like we started playing for the teammate to our left and our right. And we're like, let's just make this about us and go nuts. Like, like we just believed in that. And we ended up winning that game. I think it was 9-8. And yeah, had no business winning. But here we go. First state title. And that's how we did it.
That's exactly it. It's crazy.
I don't think I've even shared that story on the podcast. So that's a fun one. I could probably do an entire like series of episodes on that game.
I was about to say, you might want to do a whole podcast just on that game.
I should.
Because just from that 30-second snippet you just gave me, I'd listen to it. Like, I'm enthralled.
Fun story. Oh my God. My parents have the DVD recording of it, and I won't look at it because I actually had an error. I was playing shortstop and I shot a ball way over my catcher's head. Bases were loaded, routine ground ball. All of us were just scared. My college coach was in the stands. Like, it was just nuts. Yeah, and I committed that terrible error. Thankfully, I had 2 triples in that game to help me out on the other side, but it was nuts. Hey, quick sidebar from this episode. Have you heard about VHA yet? The Virtual Hitting Academy? Softball has taught me not only how to push through adversity and failure, but also how to be a better teammate and a confident woman who learned how to love pressure and thrive in it. That only came with countless hours of hard work with my dad, team, and an outstanding hitting coach, and a devotion to push for something greater than myself. Insert VHA. I thought of teenage me, who rode with my dad and eventually drove myself to hitting lessons 2 hours away. There and back would be 4 hours. And this coach got the best out of me. She was the best in the area. And not everybody has the luxury to have a great hitting coach down the street. This is why I created VHA. If you're looking to improve your confidence, to improve your swing, and to be around a community of athletes who are eager to become a better version of themselves in the box and beyond, I have something cool for you. Yes, in the past, VHA has only been a 6-month membership, but I've just opened up doors for monthly memberships, and you can cancel anytime. If you want to become a member this month, you can actually visit us in our live weekly coachings. Every month we do an hour-long coachings. We have Ask Ashley sessions where you can ask me anything that you want. You can book calls with me, parents or athletes alike, to talk about hitting, to talk about mental game, and it's at your fingertips right now. If you head to www.ashleybtraining.com and click on the VHA tab, you can sign up for our monthly membership option, which is called the Silver membership. We would love to add you to our community of VHA, and I hope you at least go check out the link. It's also in the show notes, but it's also www.ashleybtraining.com and click on the tab VHA. So excited to see who joins us. All right, let's head back to the episode. Okay, so back to, you know, that little piece that matters, you know, when it comes to postseason, like we are minutes away from postseason.
Right.
Can you talk about, like, what are the things that you're expecting? You know, like, obviously, we'll talk about dark horses here in a bit, but like, from, you know, what you've seen throughout season, like, what are some of those teams that maybe you're like, okay, we should definitely see this team making a postseason run? Like, do you have any of those in mind?
One thing I always look for at this point in the year is I like a team that's trending upward. Mm-hmm. Because when you get into the dog days of conference play, when you get into the home stretch, when everybody's banged up, sometimes including the coaches, if we're going to be honest.
Facts. Yeah.
And sometimes even us on the media side and et cetera, like sometimes.
Y'all have been through it, putting out those rankings all year long.
Well, I'm thinking of a 1:30 flight. 1:30 a.m. flight this week when I think of banged up, it's great. If that's my suffering, I think I'm doing okay. Don't get me wrong.
You're doing all right.
It's no comparison, but it's humorous. But I do like a team that's looking up, trending upward, that somehow is finding a way to win games. I look at an Arkansas, and coming into the year, I had some pretty significant doubts about Arkansas. Just, okay, what's the pitching depth going to mean? Can the offense put it together? Can they make the changes and the adjustments they need? And early on, I don't know that the answer was a resounding yes to that. Mm-hmm. Now, though, when I look at Arkansas, I see a team that's winning series after series in conference play, a team that's going into an Athens and into a Baton Rouge and taking a series from, honestly, what are tough opponents. I see a pitching staff where Morgan Linestock has stepped up and looked like an all-world pitcher because her team needed her to. And I see an offense that has Bree Ellis, that has Hannah Gamble, that has Rylan Hedgecock, award winners and All-Americans all. But on a game-to-game basis, it's not Bree Ellis's show. It's not Hannah Gamble's show. It's not Rylan Hedgecock's show. You think of Kennedy Miller, it's the freshman. It's not the Kennedy Miller show either. One day it might be Ellis. One day it might be Miller. One day it might be Gamble. One day it might be somebody that's not on that list. Like, their offense does a really nice job of being multidimensional. And you look at the results. So I really like an Arkansas team. And I look at a UCLA team that, again, very significant doubts coming into the year. What's the pitching look like?
Earlier this year, they had big losses.
Correct. Like, you have Taylor Tinsley, who had 50-some-odd innings as a freshman. And, you know, UCLA starts slow. And it's like, okay, well, expectations are going to be fulfilled. They go into Clearwater, win a couple of shootouts, which Clearwater's a whole nother animal. But then, again, when you get into these dog days, even with losing a pitcher along the way to injury, you look at what UCLA is doing. You look at that sweep of Stanford. Stanford's a good team. Mm-hmm. You look at that sweep of Stanford. You look at what Taylor Tinsley's been able to do in the circle. She's living up to her potential, which is hard to do when you're as highly touted as Tinsley was. Look at Caitlin Perry as a freshman. And look at the time and innings she's putting in. And you look at what UCLA's doing in these dog days down the stretch, you know, gutting out wins. You know, I get it. Close wins, tight games over quote-unquote mid-majors, teams that you're supposed to beat on paper. I understand, okay, well, what's going wrong is the go-to for a lot of people.
Yeah.
But when you have, honestly, this week, who was it? I don't remember who it was, but I was talking to someone, and we were talking about the fact that there are times where UCLA's had two pitchers, two, like total, that have put their arm in a circle, two. And, you know, are there close games? Sure. Do you have to come from behind against a team you probably should have beaten pretty handily on paper? Sure. But you gutted it out. You had the people step up at the right time. That's hard to do at this point in the year. I don't care who you are.
I know. There's been so many losses against top, you know, 10 opponents.
Yeah.
Yeah.
But that's my thing. It's teams like that. You do what you have to do when it's hard. That tells me a lot about what you're made of. And I think that tells me that you're capable, no matter what on paper you came into the year looking like, or even what your stats are, that tells me what you're capable of doing.
Mm-hmm. So what are those big shockers that have happened this season? Big surprising things. I'm shocked by the fact that Florida won the series versus Georgia. Very recent, but Keegan Rothrock is good.
I'm surprised that Florida's pitchers have developed so quickly so well, to be honest. Because, you know, you talk about the highly touted Rothrock was, Ava Brown was. But they also walked into a pitching staff that had zero returning innings. Mm. And they walked into that pitching staff as the saviors of that pitching staff with enormous expectations off. Because you got to think where Florida was, they broke that regional hosting streak last year. They didn't make it past regionals. Didn't make it past Nyjah Cannon. And Florida, I'm not going to say Florida was down in the dumps by any means. Tim Walton's team don't usually get down in the dumps. I don't know if anybody's noticed that. Doesn't really happen. But, you know, they certainly were not the Florida of 14-15. Enormous expectations, enormous pressure that Rothrock and or Brown could have crumbled on. And instead of crumbling, you look at what they've done. They have been the saviors of that pitching staff. And they have picked up the offense in the times the offense has not been great this year. And that's one of the biggest surprises to me, because it is really hard to perform under those expectations as freshmen. Mm-hmm. It's hard to perform under those expectations, period. But it's really hard to perform under those expectations as freshmen.
Yeah.
And then after that, Oklahoma State, I'll throw on that surprise list a little bit. I will completely own it. I was one of those teams, one of those people in the offseason that was like, what's this team going to be able to do? You know, Lexi Kilfoyle is Lexi Kilfoyle, but what else? It's kind of where my brain was going into the year. Question mark. Not they couldn't, but it was, okay, more of how could you? Well, they answer that. You look at these freshmen that have come through for them offensively. You look at Ivy Rosenberry having the year of her life. You look, honestly, at Kilfoyle. Kilfoyle is even better than I thought she would be. But it also goes back to what we talked about earlier about that team over me. Kilfoyle has put that team on her back more than a couple of times. Rosenberry's there. And, you know, she's an old Virginia Tech transfer. Didn't pitch a lot at Tech. Pitched some at OSU. But she comes in this year and she looks like a world beater, to be honest. Mm. And then the young players, some of the players who maybe hadn't had starting roles before, they've stepped up. And here Oklahoma State is. We're talking about them as a top, possible slash likely top eight seed. Again, not surprising for Oklahoma State standards or by Oklahoma State standards.
Right.
But considering what we were thinking about them in January, maybe February, maybe a little surprising, maybe a little bit. I'll own it.
Mm-hmm. Well, it's funny because I had Amanda Scarborough on right after Clearwater had happened. And talk about it, just, I mean, you even said it, like, that's a whole nother world over there. But, like, the amount of offense that we saw out of that series, like, wasn't that just crazy?
It was something to behold. I'm still not sure I know what to make of the whole thing. And that was,
I don't either,
2-3 months ago now.
I mean, shoot, I was like, whatever team's losing is going to end up winning all these games. Like, there were teams down by 5 runs, and it was like, game's not over, you know? And it, like, never was. But, man, that was just exciting to start off the year.
Yeah, I was standing next to one, I think it was a club coach, who's had a pitcher pitching, and apparently the pitcher had told the club coach, look, I'm going to have a 5 ERA. It's going to be okay if my team wins. Because there were just so many bombs going out. And it's like, okay, when a pitcher like that, one of those teams, I forget who it was off the top of my head, but I was like one of the team's best pitchers. So like a 5 ERA was like unheard of. But she's like, okay, I'm 5 ERA because might give up, in my words, you know, 30 home runs. But hey, if the team wins, okay.
It's fine. Whatever it takes.
Wild time.
Any other shocking moments from the year that you can recollect or remember?
I mean, there have been some game-wise where I couldn't believe so-and-so beat so-and-so. I even go back to Michigan beating Florida twice. Mm. You know, two different locales, two very different setups. And here Michigan goes, beats Florida twice, beats them pretty handily. Obviously, Michigan, again, is one of those teams trending upward in the back half of the year. But the start of the year, They had to find their footing. They struggled a little bit, but they beat Florida twice. And I'm like, you know, that's Michigan. Finding their footing, yes, but still a solid team. And now you're seeing that payoff. At the time, those were super surprised. Certainly for them to do it twice. You don't see a team like Florida usually lose twice to a team on paper they should beat. Now, don't get me wrong, that's not a shot at Michigan by any means. Michigan's good. But usually normally doesn't happen. And here it happens. I'm trying to think of other results. The mid-major, I think the thing most people would probably go to first is the parity in the mid-major upsets. There's not a lot of mid-major upsets that have surprised me, to be honest.
Yeah.
I think we're at a point in the game where I'm not going to say it's old hat. It's still special when it happens. But like South Alabama beating four different SEC teams on their home fields. I mean, I was there for the Mississippi State win, their fourth one. And to me, that one was the most special for South Al because Olivia Lackey had pitched the first three SEC wins. South Carolina, it was Alabama, it was Arkansas, all in non-conference tournaments. But Mississippi State was a late season, midweek, middle of conference play. And you think, okay, South Al's going to throw Lackey. She's their ace. She's their innings eater, et cetera, et cetera, et cetera. And then who do they throw but a kid who's never started a college game? Is not Olivia Lackey. And she goes out there and dominates Mississippi State. I think it was five innings, had a few strikeouts in there, scattered a couple of hits. Like, she was insanely good. And she just kept Mississippi State off balance. And I have to say this because it was so cool after the game. We did a little post game. She'd never done post game interviews, never done an interview before. I mean, she hadn't pitched a whole lot. I think had 10 innings on the year. But the SID and I go down to the field, talk to the coach, and then the SID goes over to the player and tells her he wants her to come with him. She doesn't even know she's going to do media. It's just a sweet kid. I say kid, they're all kids to me. I'm sorry, I don't mean to be demeaning. But she just comes over, and the one thing I remember her saying is how she couldn't wait to call her mom and dad after the game because she knew they were watching.
Aw.
I know, and I'm like, oh, that's so sweet. But literally, I mean, that kind of thing right there, those are the cool moments. But like, just in the bigger picture, South Al winning all those games against SEC teams, that didn't surprise me as much. The American Conference being so good in non-conference play didn't surprise me as much. Because I expect that these days. The Charlottes, the Wichitas, the North Texases. Tulsa's been a nice surprise. Florida Atlantic's been a nice surprise. But, you know, Wichita beating Arkansas, Tulsa beating Oklahoma State, those big wins don't surprise me as much. Because I think we're at a point in the game where that's still not an everyday occurrence, but it's not an abnormality.
Right. So we had recently met each other, took a picture at ULM last fall.
Yeah.
And talk about a team that's just trending.
Yeah.
Molly's doing great stuff over there.
Well, and I think this is the first time, because, you know, I used to live. So like ULM was my backyard team for several years, including when Molly got there. And so I've kind of seen what that program was, gosh, even a decade ago, decade and a half ago. And you look at them now, you look at the facilities. So like you just look, literally physically look at how different it is. But you look at where that team is compared to when Molly got there. The talent level, just the overall feel of that team of that program is so different. It's so different. And I'm going to tell you, I lived in Monroe, Louisiana for a long time. For people in Monroe, Louisiana to care about the ULM softball team is its own level of impressive.
Oh, they care.
They care.
Molly dressed us to the nines. So this is a celebrity softball game. I think I talked about it a little bit because I had Molly on like soon after.
Yeah.
But like, I didn't realize that everybody in Monroe, it felt like everybody in Monroe was there watching this celebrity softball game. It's like, we were there, Odyssey Alexander was pitching, like Little John was there on the mound throwing to Molly. It was just like a special and awesome thing. And Molly thought about everything, all the little things, they were there. And I think, because I know Molly, I played with Molly, she's doing the little things right. Yep. And she's now created a team that does those little things right. And it's been fun to follow them this year.
Honestly, you know, I go back 2 years ago, last year, ULM hosted LSU in a midweek, and huge crowd. I wasn't there, but I know it was like 1,200 people, something like that. And you and I both in there. I don't know how you're listening, but the ULM softball complex, 1,200 people is an interesting little combination.
I was going to say that probably a lot of people weren't sitting.
Right. Correct. But, you know, that's LSU. So I'm sure there's plenty of people in purple and gold and all that kind of stuff. It's great and all that. But then you think about that celebrity softball game. It's a game that doesn't even count. It's just for fun. Now, granted, there was plenty of you celebrities there. Don't get me wrong. But from a softball standpoint, it doesn't count for the standings. They're not playing for championship or whatever. And you talk about that crowd that showed up. And I'm like, it was 1,200 people. It was not 1,200 people, but it was comparable. And I'm like, that right there, the idea 15 years ago or 12 years ago, when I think back to what ULM softball's crowds were and comparing it to that, I'm talking about crowds for a game during season versus that in the fall. Insane to think about. Just the culture change, the program, just where it came from, where it's been, now where it is. And then you look at them, they're pretty decent on the field too. Crazy thought. It's not just window dressing. Like, they're actually, you look at that series they played against the Raging Cajuns. That's as good as I've seen a ULM team play.
Yeah, it's exciting. So talk about a team. I want them to make a good run. I think it'd be great.
They've got some talent to be able to do it.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
They do. Okay, so let's just finish this off with some predictions. Okay. So from a dark horse perspective, who are your dark horse teams? Emily Pitek tweeted this out earlier today, and I'm like, well, I totally have to ask Justin about this. Like, what are your dark horses that you think are going to make a run that's going to surprise everybody?
So if we're talking dark horses to run to the World Series, I'm going to go, I sound crazy. I think I'm crazy for saying it. I'll own that. But I actually think Washington is on that list for me.
Okay.
I just, don't get me wrong, it's not totally recency bias. I just saw him play Stanford up in Seattle. That's what led to the 1:30 a.m. flight referenced earlier. Mm-hmm. So that's part of why it was worth it, because it was a really good series. The one thing about Washington, yeah, you know what? Their offense at times struggles against a pitcher like Nyjah Kennedy. I saw that firsthand. What I also saw firsthand was a reminder of just how good Ruby Mahlin is. And Lindsay Lopez is not far behind her. And the Washington offense is capable. I think Victoria Hayward is a really good up-and-coming young hitting coach. I think that makes a difference. I do think that makes a difference. So, yes, was Washington's offense struggling a little bit against Nyjah Kennedy? Yes. Does that surprise anyone? Probably not. It's Nyjah Kennedy, let's just be honest. So right now, like, as we sit here, Washington is right on the bubble. And from a bracketology, bracket prediction standpoint, we probably see them on the outside looking in at this moment. Maybe that changes. But even if it does, you're talking about a lower seed. I think it's a Washington team that's got a shot at making some noise and making a run. Even though I think people will look at it and be like, oh, well, they just barely became a host. Or, hey, they had to go on the road as a two seed. It's not a two seed I want to face. It's not a two seed I want to face. Then I think about Virginia Tech too. Like, Virginia Tech's looked really good at times this year. Their offense, we know their offense. I mean, Bomb City. The pitching has not always been amazing this year, which has kind of been their downfall a little bit, giving up runs maybe when they didn't necessarily want them to or didn't need to. But Emma Limley, Lindsey Grind, even Emma Mazarone, that's a nifty little trio, to be honest. That's a nifty little trio. And they're capable of pitching. And the one thing I will say, I've seen it firsthand, they pitch well in pressure situations. They don't crumble under the pressure, which, as we all know, comes in very key in the postseason.
That matters.
The offense is the offense, but I think that ability to show up when you know, put your cards on the table or throw the chips in the pot or whatever the old colloquialisms are, I think that'll matter for Virginia Tech. So they're another one that I think I have my eye on to be able to make a run.
Awesome. I mean, this is why we're recording this, because, you know, watch one of them make a run and then we get to just bring this back out of the archives and share it everywhere and be like, Justin knew what he was talking about.
Well, we can only hope. I do like sounding smart on occasion. Only on occasion, but, you know, once or twice here and there. I'm okay with that.
All right. What else did we miss that we can look forward to, you think, this postseason?
I think the one thing that I'm most looking forward to on a personal level is, and it's kind of counterintuitive to what we talked about with the whole team over me thing, but the one thing I think we are primed and ready for this postseason is the next group of breakout national stars. If you think about the sport of softball right now, and I'm going to use a basketball reference, we don't really have a Caitlin Clark. We have Nyjah Kennedy. We have Jada Coleman. We have Reese Atwood. We have superstar players, but we don't really have anybody that transcends the sport right now. Jocelyn Allo was that. But since Allo, we haven't really had anybody that's ascended to that level. And it's not a bad thing. It's not a criticism of where we are as a sport. Does having that transcendent player help? Yes. But what I think it also does, not having that does, is it opens the door for some players who maybe, you know, are not household names to become household names.
Kind of like Odyssey Alexander that year with JMU.
Like, I think of Jess Oakland at Minnesota. She's been very good this year. What does Minnesota do in the Big Ten tournament? If they make the NCAA tournament somehow, what do they do there? But a player like that, who maybe has had such a great year, is a star player in her lane. You put a player like that in the NCAA tournament on a stage where every game is televised, where every great play, big home runs, making social media, that's when you start getting into the category and of superstars on a national level. And I think we are primed and ready for a group of those to break through this postseason.
Ooh, I'm getting goosebumps. I'm ready for this. Let's go. Like I said, we're minutes away. By the way, if people are listening and they're like, how the heck do we watch postseason softball? Go back to the first interview we had, and also Amanda Scarborough's episode to talk about ESPN and all these different platforms where we get to watch now, which is nuts and crazy and cool. But hey, if you get a chance to like watch postseason live, I mean, Justin's the guy to tell you it's worth it. So go do it.
And turn on those 2-seed versus 3-seed games with teams you've never heard of. That's worth it. Those are the ones that if you have a softball fan or somebody who's not a softball fan, you want to win them over, show them a game like that.
Mm-hmm.
It'll sell them real fast.
Yeah. That's so great. I'm so excited. It's my favorite time of year. Amazing. So if people are just listening to this for the first time, what's the best way to follow you and your work with D1 Softball?
So D1 Softball is on all the socials. It's D1Softball.com, Twitter, Facebook, Instagram, all that. And then me personally, I'm at JustFactsMan on Twitter. It's been my Twitter handle since day one of Justin on Twitter, and it's not changing. So JustFactsMan, it's the place.
It's the greatest. It's the greatest Twitter handle, in my opinion.
Well, thank you.
I do love it. Last thing I want to ask you before I send you off is, what's your favorite go-to meal on the road? Because you're on the road a lot.
Okay. Clarification. Are we talking about when I'm physically on the road or just when I'm traveling and I am somewhere?
I mean, if you like your comfortable place, like, you know, it's going to be clutch every time you go. So it doesn't matter.
So this is going to sound very Southern boy who spends 8,000 miles in his car. This year, it's actually been Arby's.
Arby's.
That's different from past years. We kind of moved away from the Subway a little bit.
I will never have that after playing college softball. No.
It's still in there. Now, if I'm stationary someplace for a while, we throw in a nice Jersey Mike's. I had a very nice pasta place in Seattle. That happens on occasion. But when I'm traveling, Arby's has become the go-to. A couple of roast beef sandwiches, something fried if I just want to feel unhealthy.
Curly fries, right?
Yeah, a little bit of everything. Mozzarella sticks are sometimes on that list.
I used to get their Jamocha shakes all the time.
I've not had that.
Oh, it's good. I don't know if they still have it, but it's good. No. But you always leave with a Dr. Pepper, right? Like, that's just how that works.
Oh, gosh, yes.
Okay.
Now,
I figured you wouldn't choose a place without Dr. Pepper.
I'm drinking less Dr. Pepper these days. So we're looking at more like 3 a day on the full days instead of 5. So we're doing better. But absolutely, yes, Dr. Pepper is part of the meal deal. It's not even a question.
Well, I'm excited to keep following you, knowing that you're eating Arby's on the road. And we'll keep up to date with all of your amazing work that you're doing with D1. And Follow him on Twitter, you guys. He's so fun to follow. I mean, if I ever just want like a little peek at what's going on that I, you know, somehow missed, he's got everything. He knows what's going on. So you were the perfect guest to kind of get us primed and ready for postseason. So just honored to have you here and thanks for your time.
I appreciate you. It always is fun.
I can't wait to look back on this episode and see how it all pans out after postseason ends. Justin makes some pretty awesome and bold predictions, but I love knowing that there are some things that he shared that are going to happen, especially when it comes to finding breakout players that our athletes can look up to, like a Caitlin Clark. It's going to be a fun ride and a fun postseason, so make sure to give Justin a follow and head to the show notes to see where and when he's going to be writing up some stories this postseason. All right, you know the drill. If you loved this episode, please share it with a friend or two. And make sure if you haven't subscribed to the podcast, you can get notified as soon as each episode drops if you are a subscriber. Thanks so much for tuning in to another episode of When the Cleats Come Off. Don't forget to stay awkward, stay humble, and keep smiling. I'll see you next week.